Section 7. It had taken time to pin the senator down. Time that Lamont had resented losing, the more so since nothing further in Latin letters had come from the paramen. No message of any kind, though Bronowski had sent across half a dozen, each with a carefully selected combination of parasymbols, and each incorporating both F-E-E-R and F-E-A-R. Lamont wasn't sure of the significance of the half-dozen variations, but Bronowski had seemed hopeful. Yet nothing had happened, and now Lamont was at last in to see Bert. The senator was thin-faced, sharp-eyed, and elderly. He had been the head of the Committee on Technology and the Environment for a generation. He took his job seriously, and had proved that a dozen times. He fiddled now with the old-fashioned necktie that he affected, and that had become his trademark, and said, "I can only give you half an hour, son." He looked at his wristwatch. Lamont was not worried. He expected to interest Senator Burt enough to make him forget about time limits. Nor did he attempt to begin at the beginning. His intentions here were quite different from those in connection with Hallam. He said, "I won't bother with the mathematics, Senator, but I will assume you realize that through pumping, the natural laws of the two universes are being mixed." "Stirred together," said the senator, calmly, "with equilibrium coming in about 10^30 power years. Is that the figure?" His eyebrows in repose arched up and then down, giving his lined face a permanent air of surprise. "It is," said Lamont, "but it is arrived at by assuming that the alien laws seeping into our universe and theirs spread outward from the point of entry at the speed of light. That is just an assumption, and I believe it to be wrong."
"Why?"
"The only measured rate of mixing is within the plutonium-186 sent into this universe. That rate of mixing is extremely slow at first, presumably because matter is dense, and increases with time. If the plutonium is mixed with less dense matter, the rate of mixing increases more rapidly. From a few measurements of this sort, it has been calculated that the permeation rate would increase to the speed of light in a vacuum."
"It would take some time for the alien laws to work their way into the atmosphere. Far less time to work their way to the top of the atmosphere and then off through space in every direction at 300,000 kilometers per second, thinning into harmlessness in no time." Lamont paused a moment to consider how best to go on, and the senator picked it up at once. "However," he urged, with the manner of a man not willing to waste time, "it's a convenient assumption that seems to make sense and seems to make no trouble. But what if it is not matter that offers resistance to the permeation of the alien laws, but the basic fabric of the universe itself?"
"What is the basic fabric?"
"I can't put it in words. There is a mathematical expression which I think represents it, but I can't put it into words. The basic fabric of the universe is that which dictates the laws of nature. It is the basic fabric of our universe that makes it necessary for energy to be conserved. It is the basic fabric of the para-universe, with a weave, so to speak, somewhat different from ours, that makes their nuclear interaction 100 times stronger than ours. And so, if it is the basic fabric that is being penetrated, sir, then the presence of matter, dense or not, can have only a secondary influence. The rate of penetration is greater in a vacuum than in dense mass, but not very much greater. The rate of penetration in outer space may be great in earthly terms, but it is only a small fraction of the speed of light."
"Which means?"
that the alien fabric is not dissipating as quickly as we think, but is piling up, so to speak, within the solar system to a much greater concentration than we have been assuming.
I see, said the senator, nodding his head. And how long, then, will it be before the space within the solar system is brought to equilibrium? Less than 10 to the 30th power years, I imagine.
Far less, sir. Less than 10 to the 10th power years, I think. Perhaps 50 billion years, give or take a couple of billion.
Not much in comparison, but enough, huh? No immediate cause for alarm, eh?
But I'm afraid that is immediate cause for alarm, sir. Damage will be done long before equilibrium is reached. Because of the pumping, the strong nuclear interaction is growing steadily stronger in our universe at every moment.
Enough stronger to measure?
Perhaps not, sir.
Not even after 20 years of pumping?
Perhaps not, sir.
Then why worry?
Because, sir, upon the strength of the strong nuclear interaction rests the rate at which hydrogen fuses to helium in the core of the sun. If the interaction strengthens even unnoticeably, the rate of hydrogen fusion in the sun will increase markedly. The sun maintains the balance between radiation and gravitation with great delicacy, and to upset that balance in favor of radiation, as we are now doing,
yes,
will cause an enormous explosion. Under our laws of nature, it is impossible for a star as small as the sun to become a supernova. Under the altered laws, it may not be. I doubt that we would have warning. The sun would build up to a vast explosion, and in 8 minutes after that, you and I will be dead, and the earth will quickly vaporize into an expanding puff of vapor.
And nothing can be done?
If it is too late to avoid upsetting the equilibrium, nothing. If it is not yet too late, then we must stop pumping. The senator cleared his throat.
Before I agreed to see you, young man, I inquired as to your background, since you were not personally known to me. Among those I queried was Dr. Hallam. You know him, I suppose?
Yes, sir. A corner of Lamont's mouth twitched, but his voice held even. I know him well.
He tells me, said the senator, glancing at a paper on his desk, that you are a troublemaking idiot of doubtful sanity, and he demands that I refuse to see you.
Lamont said in a voice he strove to keep calm, Are those his words, sir?
His exact words.
Then why have you agreed to see me, sir?
Ordinarily, if I received something like this from Hallam, I wouldn't have seen you. My time is valuable, and heaven knows I see more troublemaking idiots of doubtful sanity than bears thinking of, even among those who come to me with the highest recommendations. In this one case, though, I didn't like Hallam's demand. You don't make demands of a senator. And Hallam had better learn that.
Then you will help me, sir?
Help you do what?
Why, arrange to have the pumping halted.
That, not at all. Quite impossible.
Why not? Demanded Lamont. You are the head of the Committee on Technology and the Environment, and it is precisely your task to stop the pumping, or any technological procedure that threatens irreversible harm to the environment. There can be no greater, no more irreversible harm than threatened by pumping.
Certainly, certainly, if you are right. But it seems that what your story amounts to is that your assumptions are different from the accepted ones.
Who is to say which set of assumptions is right?
Sir, the structure I have built explains several things that are left doubtful in the accepted view.
Well, then, your colleagues ought to accept your modification, and in that case you would scarcely have to come to me, I imagine.
Sir, my colleagues will not believe. Their self-interest stands in the way.
As your self-interest stands in the way of your believing, you might be wrong. Young man, my powers, on paper, are enormous, but I can only succeed when the public is willing to let me. Let me give you a lesson in practical politics.
He looked at his wristwatch, leaned back, and smiled. His offer was not characteristic of him, but an editorial in the Terrestrial Post that morning had referred to him as a consummate politician, the most skilled in the International Congress, and the glow that that had roused within him still lingered.
"It is a mistake," he said, "to suppose that the public wants the environment protected or their lives saved, and that they will be grateful to any idealist who will fight for such ends. What the public wants is their own individual comfort. We know that well enough from our experience in the environmental crisis of the 20th century. Once it was well known that cigarettes increased the incidence of lung cancer, the obvious remedy was to stop smoking. But the desired remedy was a cigarette that did not encourage cancer. When it became clear that the internal combustion engine was polluting the atmosphere dangerously, the obvious remedy was to abandon such engines, and the desired remedy was to develop non-polluting engines. Now then, young man, don't ask me to stop the pumping. The economy and comfort of the entire planet depend on it. Tell me instead how to keep the pumping from exploding the sun."
Lamont said, "There is no way, Senator. We are dealing with something here that is so basic we can't play with it. We must stop it."
"Ah, and you can suggest only that we go back to matters as they were before pumping."
"We must."
"In that case, you will need hard and fast proof that you are right."
"The best proof," said Lamont stiffly, "is to have the sun explode. I suppose you don't want me to go that far?"
"Not necessary, perhaps. Why can't you get Hallam to back you up?"
"Because he is a small man who finds himself the father of the electron pump. How can he admit his child will destroy the earth?"
"I see what you mean. But he is still the father of the electron pump to the whole world, and only his word would carry sufficient weight in this respect."
Lamont shook his head. He would never give in.
He would rather see the sun explode.
The senator said, "Then force his hand. You have a theory, but a theory by itself is meaningless. Surely there must be some way of checking it. The rate of radioactive breakdown of, say, uranium depends on the interactions within the nucleus. Has that rate been changing in a fashion predicted by your theory but not the standard one?" Again, Lamont shook his head. "Ordinary radioactivity depends on the weak nuclear interaction. And unfortunately, experiments of that sort will yield only borderline evidence. By the time it showed sufficiently to be unmistakable, it would be too late."
"What else, then?"
"There are pion interactions of a specific sort that might yield unmistakable data now. Better still, there are quark-quark combinations that have produced puzzling results recently that I am sure I can explain."
"Well, there you are."
"Yes, but in order to obtain that data, I must make use of the large proton synchrotron on the moon, sir, and no time on that will be available for years. I've checked.
Unless,
someone pulls the strings. Meaning me. Meaning you, Senator.
Not as long as Dr. Hallam says this about you, son. And Senator Burt's gnarled finger tapped the piece of paper in front of him. I can't get out on that limb.
But the existence of the world.
Prove it.
Override Hallam, and I'll prove it.
Prove it, and I'll override Hallam.
Lamont drew a deep breath. Senator, suppose there's just a trifling chance I'm right. Isn't even that trifling chance worth fighting for? It means everything. All mankind, the entire planet.
You want me to fight the good fight? I'd like to. There's a certain drama in going down in a good cause. Any decent politician is masochistic enough to dream now and then of going down in flames while the angels sing. But Dr. Lamont, to do that, one has to have a fighting chance. One has to have something to fight for that may, just may, win out. If I back you, I'll accomplish nothing with your word alone against the infinite desirability of pumping. Shall I demand every man give up the personal comfort and affluence he has learned to get used to, thanks to the pump, just because one man cries doom, while all the other scientists stand against him, and the revered Hallam calls him an idiot? No, sir. I will not go down in flames for nothing.
Lamont said, Then just help me find my proof. You needn't appear in the open if you fear.
I'm not afraid, said Burt abruptly. I'm being practical. Dr. Lamont, your half hour is rather more than gone.
Lamont stared for a moment in frustration, but Bert's expression was a clearly intransigent one now. Lamont left. Senator Burt did not see his next visitor immediately. Minutes passed while he stared uneasily at the closed door and fiddled with his tie. Could the man have been right? Could he have had the smallest chance of being right? He had to admit it would be a pleasure to trip Hallam and push his face into the mud and sit on him till he choked. But it would not happen. Hallam was untouchable. He had had only one set-to with Hallam nearly 10 years ago. He had been right, dead right, and Hallam had been egregiously wrong, and events had since proved it to be so. And yet, at the time, Burt had been humiliated, and he had almost lost re-election as a result. Burt shook his head in admonition to himself. He might risk re-election in a good cause, but he could not risk humiliation again. He signaled for the next visitor, and his face was calm and bland as he rose to greet him.